WTRY in Troy, New York.
Hi, DXers. Welcome to Market Scope for January 2001 as the DX Audio Service enters what is officially a new millennium. Now, as you may recall from last month, we paused about 10 megahertz or so into Miami's FM band. So as we continue on, here is your Market Scope guest host, Mike Lance.
Now we move to 99.9, KISS 99.9 out of Boca Raton, near a country station, South Florida's only country radio station, and they're owned by Sunshine Wireless. They are also own WQAM 560, and this is what KISS 99.9 sounds like.
She's hotter and a whole lot sweeter, and all day long, she's been there alone. Right now her arms are open, the house is a problem spoken. Now there's something turned on at home.
Down next is 99.1, Jams 99.1, WEDR, a soul station, and they're owned by Cox Broadcasting, and this is what they sound like.
2-1, and I'm big, with a romantic light, you mean a lot to me so many ways.
Now it's 99 Jams. Okay, next we move to 98.3, a Spanish station, and their rhythm 98.3, I do believe, and this is what they sound like. Next, we move to 97.9 WRMF out of Palm Beach, playing the 80s and the 90s and today, and this is what they sound like.
This Saturday afternoon between 1 and 3, the place you want to be is the Palm Beach Auto Mall on Military Trail, where you can register to get marooned with Mickey and Morley. You can win a trip or two to the Crystal Palace Resort and Casino, plus qualified to win the grand prize package. Hey, the pizza's free from Pizza Hut, and you don't want to miss this one, because we're going to choose another winner at 3 p.m. For the details, log on to WRMF.com. Hey, this is Mary McNally, set and ready to kick off the early morning variety music hour, which includes Splendors, I Think God Can Explain. But first, here's Natalie Ambruglia with Thorn.
A better variety of the 80s, 90s, and today. 97.9 WRMF.
Next is Coast 97.3 WFLC, music of the 80s, 90s, and today. And they're also owned by Cox Broadcasting. And this is what they sound like.
Play Florida Lotto with big drawings every Wednesday and Saturday night. Have you bought your tickets yet? Watch the drawings on WFOR CBS4.
Coast 97 FM is WFLC, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and the Palm Beaches.
Hi, William Shatner here. You know, sometimes evolution just doesn't work out. Take chickens, which for more than 2 million years have been man's primary source of...
Now we move to 96.5, Power 96 WPOW, and they're owned by Sunshine Wireless. And this is what they sound like. There's a Jamaican pirate station at 96.1, and we move on to 95.7, which is Seoul 95.7, and they're in Spanish, and this is what they sound like. Now we move to Zeta 4 WZTA, also owned by Clear Channel. And they are rock station. Now they're doing a talk show, and this is what they sound like.
Rooting for a scholarship?
Exactly.
America, USA,
is more than just beautiful. It's also a means of achieving financial independence.
Now, next is Love 94 WLVE Smooth Jazz, owned and operated by Clear Channel. And here's a little taste of them. The next station is WTMI 93.1, and they are classical. They were just bought by Cox Broadcasting, and this is what they sound like. Now we move into 92.3. And it's WCMQ-FM. It's known as Classical 92. They play classic oldies in English and in Spanish. And this is what they sound like.
Sin poder mirar hacia el futuro. Solo. Sin ti.
Next is 91.3 WLRN, National Public Radio. And this is what they sound like. Now they were broadcasting The Learning Experience, which is a jazz program from Miami Lakes Technical Educational Center. They teach communications. Now we move to 89.7 WMCU. It's a Christian station, and it's a kind of progressive Christian station, and this is what they sound like.
Present every day, in my final breath I'll say,
our last station is 88.9, your jazz and rhythm station, WDNA, in Miami, and this is what they sound like. I hope you enjoyed this Market Scope. There are a few stations that I couldn't get in on this tape recorder too good. For example, 89.3 WRMB out of Boynton Beach, which is religion, and Radio Paradise at 88.3. They are a new station in Miami, and they are religious. Should anybody have any further questions or want to know more about the stations, don't hesitate. You can write to me either in tape or in Braille, or you can contact me by phone. My name is Mike Lance, L-A-N-T-Z. The phone number is area code 305-673-0430. And my address is 3425 Collins, C-O-L-I-N-S Avenue, apartment 718, Miami Beach, Florida, 33140. Thank you so much for listening. And for Market Scope and the DX Audio Service, this is Mike Lance.
Thanks, Mike, for a great tour of Miami's commercial radio dials. Now, for those of you who might be new to the DX Audio Service and Market Scope, that's what we do here on this portion of your cassette. If you'd like to send us a tape of your radio market, perhaps even comment as Mike did, contact me, Phil Wayne, at 1872 Myers Road East, that's M-Y-E-R-S, in Marion, Ohio, 43302-9160. As we at the DX Audio Service wish all of our friends and families the happiest of holiday seasons and many continued blessings into the new year, we turn you over to Musings from the Merry Members.
This is Musings of the Members. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Erdman out in Meade, Kansas, and we got some things to report to the members after the long Thanksgiving weekend. Two from Wisconsin, 1150 WJOK in Kaukauna, that's in the Fox Valley. They are no longer running one-on-one sports. They have switched to EWTN Radio after an ownership change as of Friday, November 24th. And sources tell me on that first day there was no correct legal ID run at all. Hopefully they've remedied that by now. 1230 WXCO in Wausau, now ESPN Radio full-time. And they're billing themselves as Wausau's ESPN Radio, 1230 WXCO. A couple other things, 800 KDDD, Dumas, Texas. They're back split from their FM. They're running the Jones Good Time Oldies format again. And I hate to digress, but 1550 KDDC in Dodge City, they're not dark. They have a rather erratic schedule, and they're promoting the fact that they're going to be running CNN headline news coming soon from 7 a.m. to noon, and then they'll continue to run Spanish programming the rest of the day. So that's all we've got for now. Happy holidays.
Hello, everybody. This is Mike Blank in Greenville, North Carolina. I'm fixing to go up north to visit my mother, so I couldn't go to the library and check this out or have it checked out. John, I think you made a mistake. New Orleans is south of Jacksonville, Florida. You just said on the thing that Jacksonville's as far south as 600 went. So check it out on the map. I could be mistaken, but I think New Orleans is about as far south as St. Augustine, Florida. Thank you. Y'all have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and Happy Hanukkah and a good beginning of next year.
Hi there, Audio Service members. Mike Dukin calling from Hayward, Wisconsin on Thursday evening, December the 14th. Fred, I totally agree with everything you had to say on your editorial about broadcasting. It's definitely gone by the wayside, at least some of it is. Case in point around here is we have an AM station which was purchased a year ago and is now an automated talker, and pretty much all their talk programming is pretty much 100% done on, by satellite. A case in point, on the weekends, WCSW in Shell Lake, Wisconsin on 940 does a lot of their weekend programming from WOR in New York. I don't know if it's Westwood 1 or not, but after the ABC newscast, you don't hear anything. And then you'll hear an announcement that will say, coming up next will be the, Dr. Joy Brown, as we continue WOR programming on SATCOM 1 something or other. And you're lucky if you hear a local weather report. The only time the radio station does any local programming at all is the second or third Saturday of the month, I don't remember which, for a radio auction. So there you go. So I just thought I'd mention that. Fred, I totally agree with everything you said on your editorial. And by the way, Fred, who was it that does the sleigh bell rock? That was a cool version of that rockabilly classic. Thank you very much, and hope everybody has a good holiday season.
And that's our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Just a few calls. I guess everyone's out doing holiday shopping or doing other things with their time. So let's move right on with some comments here. Mike Dukin, you've got a great ear. That was Sleigh Bell Rock by Three Aces and a Joker. I think that was 1961 for that. A minute and 48 seconds worth of vinyl edited down for the DX Audio Service intro. I've been doing a lot of that for my jingle tapes and music and stuff, just trying to save a lot of the stuff that seems to be deteriorating with time. And since I have the tools here on the computer workstations to record in stuff and clean it up and then export it off to CDs and also to MP3 files, I've been doing a lot of that lately, especially with the jingle reels, because a lot of this tape is just starting to fall apart. Also, I could not believe the number of emails and letters that were showing up concerning my editorial. I'd have to guess, as of right now, at least 20 or more. Each one of them was along the lines of what Mike Dukin just said, which makes me wonder again, whose will is it anyways for radio to be like this? One letter did wonder how serious the news and public service issue is. And allow me to tell you what happened this past Sunday, December 17th, and I'll let you judge for yourself. Just put yourself in my shoes when you're listening to this. Saturday and Sunday, our area was hit with some high winds and snow, and temperatures were in the single digits. Now, just after noon on Sunday, the power went off to folks here on the west side of Allen County, Ohio, and it stayed off until about 5:12 p.m. in the afternoon. It came back on, and then just after 7 p.m., it went off again until about 8:30 p.m. When I tuned to the local radio stations, here's what I found. One local single-ownership religious station was on with syndicated religious shows. No mention was made even during the outage of the outage or weather conditions. I didn't bother checking the NPR station, which is a relay out of Toledo, since they've never covered any news or emergencies here in the area for the 15 years that I've lived here or so. One of the large chain broadcasting concerns, which owns three FMs at 1 a.m., was off the air. The other large chain, which was on the air with their three AMs and one FM, or I should say three FMs and 1 a.m. However, here's what's interesting. The one chain who was off the air obviously lost their studio power and their one FM site. One of the transmitters was off while two of the FMs and the AM stayed on the air with dead carrier. Or in the case of the AM station, it was transmitting white noise like you'd hear on the blank spot of an FM dial due to their STL being off. I seem to recall that there is a FCC rule saying that if you lose your studio link or your remote control link, that the transmitters must be interlocked so that they go off. However, this obviously was not the case. They stayed on the air. Also, this is the same chain that dropped their LP2 EAS status in our community because doing EAS tests and being a part of the EAS system was, quote, too difficult for our operators, unquote. Now, as far as the other broadcast chain, they were doing ball games on their stations, and from what I could tell, they made sure all their spots were played. I listened for over 45 minutes without even a mention of the problem. At one point, they did mention the power outage, and just before the power came on, 4 hours and 15 minutes after it went off, they did announce that there were shelters open at the Red Cross building for people without heat. However, we had the second outage, and they continued to run announcements saying that we had a power outage this afternoon, and power was restored at 5:12 to 3,000 residents in the area, and these announcements continued throughout the outage and into the late evening. Again, maybe I'm just being a little hard on these folks, but in times of emergency, the radio is the front line for the distribution of information, and I'm sorry that it costs money or you have to have an employee come in to report on these situations, and I can surely sympathize with employees that don't want to leave their homes in such storms. However, I do find it disgraceful, and I'm angry that the information process was compromised. The director of the county EMA was concerned, and there were even doubts that we could even activate the EAS system given the level of apathy by broadcasters, and many of my neighbors found it very frustrating. Several who know of my work at the TV station and affiliation with the Allen County EMA called me wanting to know what was going on, and a few of the elderly neighbors in the neighborhood were scared and concerned about the lack of heat and their pipes possibly freezing. So I hope you see why this is why I feel the way I do and why I think the 1996 Telecommunications Act needs to be reversed. Broadcasters need to be responsible to the public in times of emergency or plainly just lose their license. And I hope you see why I feel Congress and the FCC should be held accountable for allowing it to get to this level. You know, historically, we were better off 10 years ago the way radio was. And I do predict that in the next couple of years, if nothing changes, we will see lives lost as a result of apathetic broadcasters and politicians.
You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
The ITU clears the way to digital AM radio. This was posted by Tim Kreidel. Geneva, 22 November 2000. A new way of broadcasting is about to reach the marketplace with the recent adaptation by the International Telecommunications Union of Worldwide Standard on Digital Sound Broadcasting. The technology breakthrough promises to open up a new era of sound quality broadcasting for long, medium, and shortwave transmissions. With the FM bands nearly congested and the poor quality of AM, digital AM radio offers many substantial advantages to broadcasters seeking to recapture market shares. For consumers, the decision means additional sources of programs at FM-like quality with low-cost, simple-to-use receivers. Because the same frequency bands based on the same channels will be used, and the handsets will continue to be available in the same range of choices, fixed, portable, and mobile radio, the changeover to the new system will be completely transparent. What will be noticeable, however, will be the improved quality with crystal clear reception, the more diverse program content as a result of the increases of broadcasters that will be able to accommodate in the existing AM bands, as well as the richer content that the new digital features will offer. It's a breath of fresh air, says Peter Sengar of DRM. This landmark decision will bring affordable digital sound quality and services to the world marketplace that will surpass listeners' expectations and will revive the broadcasting market in areas whose development was stagnating. Adding, this is the biggest advancement in broadcasting since the invention of the transistor. Robert Strubel, President and Chief Executive Officer of Ubiquity Digital Corporation, hailed the decision as a significant milestone on the road toward a global standard for AM digital broadcasting. Digital broadcasting offers the potential for new and improved services to AM radio listeners who will greatly benefit from the existence of a worldwide standard for the transmission and reception of digital signals, he said. For manufacturers, it brings a second lease to life on older AM technologies with increased market potential for transmitters and receivers. It also makes it possible to optimize the return on investment for dual technology components for low data rate systems applied to narrowband transmission channels. Considering that there are potentially some 2.5 billion radio receivers that will ultimately be candidates for replacement, of which some 700 million for shortwave reception, combined with an estimated 1,000 transmitters worldwide, the benefit for equipment and semiconductor manufacturers is clear. For broadcasters, the new technology means that they will be able to bring FM quality to AM bands at substantially lower costs. Because the new technology is accommodating existing frequency plans, they'll be able to modify and continue to use their existing transmitters, provided that they are fairly modern. Digital AM will also be more spectrum efficient, making it possible to reduce the power of transmitters by as much as 25%, while maintaining the same coverage area. Broadcasters will also be able to transmit programs in two languages, a plus in bilingual countries or on border zones between countries that use different languages. Better audio quality and value-added services for listeners, that is data, text, or still images, will also translate into increased audience interest and increased advertising revenue as a result of the new business opportunities. This integration of audio and wireless data transmission will enable a variety of consumer applications, such as station and programming content, local traffic and weather information, news, and much more. Because this digital signal is more reliable and robust, it can be nearly interference-free. Receivers will tune to the best possible reception quality of a given station based on the signal strength and the AFS, the automatic frequency switching system, within any of the long, medium, and shortwave bands. Digital AM radio is expected to reach a mass market by 2003. The transition period, transmitters and receivers will handle both analog and digital signals, thus enabling broadcasters who have large operations in the AM band to opt for simulcast to continue serving their customers while building a new market. Manufacturers are expected to provide the market with a multi-standard receiver to enable the simultaneous reception of both analog AM and FM as well as digital AM stations. In vacant AM channels, broadcasters will be able to launch full digital AM as the receivers will recognize both analog and digital signals. The approval of a worldwide standard should give the possibility to achieve economies of scale in the production and deployment of transmitters and receivers with potentially lower costs to consumers while giving broadcasters the flexibility to migrate to digital AM radio according to market demand. For those of you that like listening to Longwave, here's a chance to get a new Longwave radio station. The Wireless Group PLC, TWG, the UK's fourth largest radio group, announced today that it has entered an exclusive negotiation to acquire a 33% stake in Delta Radio, a recently formed commercial radio group whose principal asset is the new national analog station. In return for its 33% stake, TWG will undertake the management of the station, including programming, sales, and logistics. There is no cash consideration payable. The service to be broadcast as 171 The Lounge on 171 kHz long wave will be launched in 2002 under license from the Dutch government on a recently released long wave frequency to a potential UK audience of over 40 million. The transmission facility will be built in the Dutch coast near Zeeland and includes two masts, each half again as tall as the Eiffel Tower. Whilst 171 The Lounge will not be regulated under UK law, TWG will ensure that the station respects UK copyright and broadcast content codes and complies with Advertising Standards Authority guidelines. The station will be music-intensive, featuring the best easy-listening music and melodic songs of the past 40 years with key artists including Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, Dean Martin, Simply Red, The Carpenters, Gabriel, and Neil Diamond. Under the terms of the agreement, TWG will undertake the management of the station's programming and advertising sales. TWG will not be involved in the funding of the new station, which will be financed via a separate agreement with other shareholders. The Lounge is expected to break even within 3 years of launch. This transaction is consistent with the Wireless Group's stated strategy of capturing greater market share by investing in additional radio assets. Some of our DX Audio Service members know that we have an email list on our web server that deals with topics of AM radio. We also have FM TV, some DX tips, DX change, and lots more. One of our DX Audio Service members, Robin Plitt, has started a email list, which is for the topic of talking about Florida radio, of all things. And we got Robin on the line. Robin, explain to me a little bit about this email list that you're starting on eGroups.
Yes, Fred. It's called FL Radio TV at eGroups.com. It is an open mailing list for discussion of all aspects of broadcasting in Florida.
And what kind of broadcast formats, or is it just about everything?
It's about, I guess, commercial radio especially. AM, FM, and TV is what I had designed it to be.
And do you have any people that are ready and willing to join the group right now?
I mentioned it to a couple of people that are on the National Radio Club list, and they said they might be interested, so I was persuaded to start the list.
Okay. And the topics, what kind of things would you be talking about on the list?
Well, I'm kind of hoping to have it as a general news-oriented discussion of radio in Florida, like new station formats, new personnel, different reception reports from different people in Florida of what they might be getting from within and outside of Florida. Florida is kind of a a unique place to listen to the radio because we can actually readily receive three different countries.
And which countries are those?
Well, of course, you can get the Bahamas, you can get Cuba, and you can get the United States.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, I live in Palm Beach, near Palm Beach, Florida, which is about 60 miles north of Miami on the east coast of Florida. And I'm relatively close to the Bahamas, so I can hear their radio, and I can also hear, of course, the Cubans, which we can all hear all over the United States, thanks to their compliance.
Yeah, we hear them rather well up here in Ohio, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
But do you normally hear anything from the other side of the ocean, transatlantic receptions?
I think I've heard some Mexican and South American stations. I haven't heard anything from the off towards the other side of the Atlantic.
Okay.
Every once in a while, of course, we can hear Bonaire has a station from the Radio Netherlands relay, and you can hear the religious programming on 800 every once in a while.
Now, you mentioned that primarily the list is going to be about Florida radio. Now, many of us who have been in radio for a long time remember some of the great rockers like WFUN 790 and the Big Ape and such. Are there going to be any discussions of some of those old stations from days gone by?
I kind of hope so. I grew up listening to WQAM in Miami when it was a rocker. They had a guy named Rick Shaw who was down there that pretty much ran that station. And a lot of people from around, you may have heard up in Ohio of a guy named Jim Dunlap or Lee Sherwood, who both of those guys were down here. And I also remember WFUN. And there was a station that was called WGTO, which was in Central Florida, that I could hear periodically when I was younger.
That was 540, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Okay. I remember very well some of the big rockers and also some of the other stations. Like there was 710 WGBS, wasn't there?
Yes, 710 was another station. That was the first sports station I ever listened to, or they had sports in the evening. They had a sports talk format. They did... what was it, the ABA Miami team. I can't remember what the name of the team was. And I started listening to basketball games. Red Barber also used to do a commentary. He, of course, was the famous sports announcer that did the Dodgers broadcast for a while. He retired to Florida and worked for WGBS for probably 10 years or so.
Sure. And as I recall, also, there was some... I guess some history made in Miami at 940 WINZ. Wasn't it the station which started Joe Pine out as in talk radio?
Yes, Miami, of course, has generated several talk hosts that you all might have heard of. Joe Pine was one of them. Larry King worked at WIOD in Miami for a while, as well as another station out on Miami Beach, which was at the time, I believe, called WKAT.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, I think there were a couple of other people that from Miami that came to national prominence.
Hope these discussions continue. It's going to be very interesting reading some of the recollections of some of the folks in the list.
I kind of hope it to be a free-for-all on all those topics. I used to be a news columnist for a local radio newspaper here, and I covered radio and television.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been interested in radio. And I kind of like those stories, and I kind of like to know what's going on, and I'm kind of hoping we can get the people in Florida together to keep one another informed.
Now, if someone would like to subscribe, is it limited only to Florida residents, or can us up here in the northern land subscribe?
No, it's an open list. Anybody that wants to talk about Florida radio or the subjects that come up, and I'm going to be pretty, I'm the moderator, and I'll be pretty liberal about what we talk about, but generally I'd like to keep it Florida-oriented. But anybody can subscribe. All you have to do is go to the e-group site and look for the list under radio or send a message to flradiotv-subscribe@egroups.com. That's an email message, just a blank message, and that will subscribe you to the list.
Okay. I hope we get some people on the list and get some good discussions going. It'd be nice.
I do, too. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what happens.
Robin, thanks a lot for being with us.
Great, Fred. It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
And that was Robin Plitt from down in Florida talking about the email list called Florida Radio TV. And if you get on the list and happen to meet up with Robin, be sure to tell him that you heard about it right here on the DX Audio Service. If you've been with the National Radio Club for any length of time, you've probably heard about the Sony ICF-2010 and the GE Super Radio 1, 2, and 3. But have you heard of the Henry Kloss Model 1 radio? Well, this is a review of the Henry Kloss Model 1 radio by Philip Marinaccio. His email address is olsons98@yahoo.com. Philip writes, as I sit here writing this review, I'm listening to WPLR in New Haven, Connecticut, on my newly purchased Henry Kloss Model 1 radio, and I have to say the sound is absolutely outstanding. I purchased this fine radio this morning from Sounds Incredible in Danbury, Connecticut. The radio comes in three colors: walnut cabinet with an off-white faceplate, cherry with a cobalt blue faceplate, or natural with a hunter green faceplate. I chose the walnut and off-white model. The layout of the front panel is very simple and elegant. On the left side sits a 3-inch speaker hidden by a metal grille. On the right is a 3-inch 5-to-1 vernier dial with FM markings on the top, while the AM markings take up the bottom half of the dial. Between the two is an on-off switch, AM-FM switch, and above that is a volume control. Sandwiched between the two knobs is a green LED indicator for on-off purposes, and a slightly larger yellow-orange LED used for FM and AM tuning. It's not big at all, 4.5 inches high by 8.75 inches wide and 5 inches deep, and it weighs 5 pounds. I started listening to the FM band first and was amazed at the abundance of stations using just the internal antenna. The sensitivity and selectivity were excellent. But what really sets this baby apart from other radios in its price class is the sound. All I can say is wow, wow, and wow. At full volume, there is no distortion whatsoever. I had the radio in my den and stepped back to hear it, what it sounded like. It filled the room with music as if it were my stereo. I couldn't believe that this little radio, sitting at the far end of my room, was so powerful and clear. Now it was time to see how it would respond as a broadcast band DX machine. Sadly to say, it was terrible. My son's boombox was superior. My Super Radio 3 makes it look like a crystal set. Unfortunately, there is only an external antenna connection for FM and not AM. Make no bones about it, this radio was designed for FM listening with the AM section thrown in for good measure. I placed my select antenna behind it, and the reception was vastly improved. It would be a little awkward to place the radio on your countertop with the select antenna behind it, so I think I'll relegate the Model 1 to FM listening only. A look at the back reveals a slide switch for internal and external antenna use. There are jacks for headphone, aux in, record out, 12 to 16 volts DC, and FM antenna. The AC line cord also plugs into the back panel and can be removed if you choose to use the external DC source. I would definitely recommend this radio to anyone who is in search of a top-performing FM radio with absolutely outstanding sound and reception. Even though its AM reception is weak, for $99, you can't go wrong. Maybe I'm being a little too harsh on the AM performance, but that's what happens when you become accustomed to a Super Radio 3. Has anyone else had a chance to listen to this radio? If so, I'd love to hear your comments. Philip then adds the following. I just received an email from Tivoli regarding the AM band, and here is their reply. Hello there, and thanks for your comments. Yes, the FM tuner is the real driving focus of the Model 1. But the AM is pretty good in its own right when adding the use of an external loop antenna, $30 to $40 at Radio Shack. That is what we are suggesting to customers who really wish to tune in AM radio stations. The ability to pull in hard-to-reach stations with this external antenna is remarkable. Do try it if you wish, and let us know your experience. Thanks again, Lori at Tivoli Audio. And now we have a column called Target DX, which is written by Russ Edmonds in DX News Magazine. We'll have Russ's address information at the end of this column. Welcome to yet another edition of Target DX. Please note again that my primary email address for this column and the listserv and other NRC items is now wb2bjh@nrcdxas.org. I will still retain the former email address, so if mail is sent to one of the others, I will get it. Remember, too, if you have any questions you'd like answered or topics you'd like to see discussed, please let me know either by email or the regular mail address. This time, we're back to the question and answer format. Question: does the vertical angle of radiation remain constant in all directions in a directional antenna? Well, the answer is the actual angle will remain constant. However, the amount of signal radiated will vary in accordance with the actual directional pattern. Taller towers, both those which are physically taller as well as those which are constructed in such a way as to have the electrical properties of a taller antenna, such as the so-called top hat types, are generally radiating a lesser vertical signal component than do shorter antennas, which may have an impact on the vertical angle of radiation. Another question: what effect does ground conductivity in an area between a transmitter and a receiver have on the skywave signal strength at the receiver? The answer? Ground conductivity between transmitter and receiver is a significant factor in ground wave propagation. However, its effect on skywave is limited to the conductivity at the transmitter and receiver sites. As has recently been discussed in the DX notebook, the ground conductivity at the receiver site makes more of a difference depending on what type of receiving antenna you use. In the case of long wire antennas and beverage antennas, ground conductivity can cause major differences, both between two different receiving locations or at the same ones if conductivity is highly variable owing to the weather. Another question: my car radio is fine for DXing when the motor isn't running, but when it is, I get all sorts of noise. What can I do? Well, the answer is, first, you can try exchanging your spark plugs for some of the low noise variety, although you may have to obtain these from one of the larger auto supply houses, either locally or by mail or the internet. Also, you can obtain low noise distributor cables in the same way and install them, or have them installed. Keeping the engine well tuned and the points cleaned also can help. If all of that is not good enough, you might look into repositioning the whip antenna if that's possible. The best position for reducing noise from your own engine is on the rear fender. Another possibility is that there may be a short circuit either in the antenna cable, either at the mounting point of the antenna, or at the place along the route where it goes through a tight place or rubs against the metal. You can also look for sharp bends in the cable, which might have a break. Generally, if there's any visible damage to the outside of the cable, there's a good chance that there's damage on the inside as well, and the entire antenna cable should be replaced. Finally, you can check to make sure that the antenna isn't shorting to its mounting and that the insulating spacer that shields the antenna from the body of the vehicle is intact. If all of the above are okay, it is possible that there is an intermittent or damaged ground somewhere in the engine or on the accessory. Try to determine whether or not the noise is present when the car is motionless with the engine on. If not, try each of the accessories, adding them one by one to see if any of them, or perhaps some combination of them, is a problem. If the noise is only present when the vehicle is moving, it may be static electricity building up from your tires. If the noise seems to change when you go from any one type of pavement to another, this is almost surely the problem. Unfortunately, other than waiting several thousand miles for tires to wear enough to reduce the noise, I don't know of any solution for the problem. You can also try a noise filter on the power lines between the engine compartment and the radio, One member recently reported on the listserv that he had tried a Rampage antenna stereo noise filter bought at Kmart, and reports that nearly all of his noise is gone. This is a simple inline antenna filter that costs only $9.95. Here's another question. I recently purchased a new receiver, and I find that there are strong open carriers on 630, 755, 880, 1130, and 1380. These are all either 125 or 250 kilohertz, removed from one another. What could be causing this? The answer? Well, I can't tell for sure. I can offer a suggestion or two. First, does the receiver have either a 125 or 250 kilohertz crystal oscillator? If so, it may either be switched on and simply need to be turned off, or else there may be a defect in the switching circuitry. Another possibility would be a similar condition with a crystal filter instead. Another possibility might be that the signal is being generated by another nearby piece of equipment in the shack that has a crystal that oscillates at such a frequency. Try disconnecting or turning off any other equipment in the shack that might produce a signal, one by one, to see if you can identify anything in that way. If you have a second receiver available, you may be able to use that as a control to either help locate the signal or establish that it must be coming from inside your new receiver. If the latter is the case, it's time to contact the receiver manufacturer. And our final question reads, since I live in a heavily wooded lot, my long wire is periodically shorted out, or at least touched by branches, and loses much of its oomph. The built-in works better than the SW8 on those occasions. How much loss would I get by using an insulated antenna? The wire runs about 60 feet with an insulated lead-in. The answer? If the wire inside the insulation is identical to that which you use now, you should incur no more loss at the outset, gaining better performance owing to no leaves or branches touching the conductor, and possibly less degradation of reception due to weathering of the conductor, although you likely wouldn't notice so much small difference. There is no loss on long wave, medium wave, or short wave frequencies. Use of insulated wire also simplifies antenna installation. The wire can rest on branches and no insulators required. Select a wire type with heavy-duty insulation so that rubbing of the wire against branches doesn't wear out the insulation and cause a short. If the wire gets minimal direct sun, the insulation should last for several years, and the insulation can degrade with heavy exposure to sunlight. And that's it for this edition. You can contact Russ Edmunds, E-D-M-U-N-D-S, at 753 Valley Road, Bluebell, Pennsylvania, 19422-2052. And my email address is wb2bjh@nrcdxas.org.
Must ride around with that, lay it on there.
And before us muskrats slide on out of here for yet another year, geez, where has the time gone anyways? Ken Chatterton from the Publication Center would like me to remind you that if you would like to give a gift subscription of the DX Audio Service to someone this year, a new member, you still have time to do that and take advantage of our deal where you give a gift of the DX Audio Service to someone and you get several months added to your DX Audio Service subscription. It's very easy to do. Just make the check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated, just INC at the end, and send it to me here at the DX Audio Service or send it to Ken up at the Publication Center. Make sure that it's for the funds where the person resides. So if you're in the United States and you're buying a membership for someone in Canada, it has to be the Canadian rate. And send it to the Publication Center or myself. You know my address. Ken Chatterton's address is Post Office Box 164, Mansville, New York. That's Mansville, New York, 13661. And Ken's last name is spelled Chatterton. and he's at the Publication Center. And remember, when you give a gift, you get one as well. Limited time only, so get those in right away. And also, Ken would like to, for me to remind you that if you would like to get a copy of the brand new AM radio log on disc, he still has some copies available. It's a great deal. It's a 1.44 floppy disc with an edited version of the AM radio log, and it's written in ASCII format. It works with JAWS for Windows, plain old JAWS, or ASAP, and does a fine job in being able to locate radio stations and find out information on that station you might have heard some night, and you're just trying to figure out who that might be. Contact him at the Publication Center for more details. Well, with that, I think I'm going to skedaddle out of here. Get ready to go up north and visit the family for the Christmas holiday and New Year's. And we'll see you back in 30 days with more DX stuff right here on the DX Audio Service. 73 good DX, happy holidays. And remember, get out there and support radio. It's a great hobby. 73s.
The DX Audio Service.
Sure, what do you have in mind?
There's nothing else quite like it.